To my Kinky Boots family, to Harvey Fierstein and Cyndi Lauper, who created the template that allows for me to express the journey of forgiveness and acceptance.
I thank you, American Theater Wing, seriously, for taking me seriously.
It's the first time I think that a community newspaper like Gay News has been featured as a YouTube series. It covers the politics of the time, the 1970s, and also it covers the many interviews we did with people from all walks of life.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Bigotry is unanimous in Russia's Duma. Kramer and Porter star at the Tonys, and yesterday's UK Gay News makes history again. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 15, 2013. By an astonishingly unanimous vote of 436-0, Russia's parliament, or State Duma, passed a bill this week to outlaw what it calls propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations. Violators, native Russians and foreign visitors, face stiff fines and jail terms if convicted. Media organizations face huge fines if they're convicted of violating the law. Although its sponsors claim that the bill is intended to protect children, critics say that it's written so broadly that it amounts to an outright ban on any public discussion of LGBT rights, including pride events. Anyone who speaks publicly in defense of LGBT rights could also be sent to jail. Before the vote, about 20 LGBT activists were taken into custody after holding a kissing protest outside the parliament building. A much larger group of protesters chanted, "Russia is not Sodom," and sang Orthodox Christian songs. Several physically attacked the heavily outnumbered activists. The bill now goes to the Federation Council, where it has strong support, and then to President Vladimir Putin, who's widely expected to sign it. Similar laws have already passed in several Russian cities and regions, including St. Petersburg, but the new law would apply nationwide. Traditional sexual relations are relations between a man and a woman, argued Yelena Mizaluna, one of the bill's authors. These relations need special protection.
Reaction from several global rights groups came swiftly. Graham Reed of Human Rights Watch called the new Russian law discrimination and a violation of basic human rights. "It is cynical," he added, "and it is dangerous." Martin K.I. Christensen, co-chair of the executive board of the European branch of the international LGBTI group ILGA, charged that Russian lawmakers have chosen to disregard their international human rights commitments and to ignore their own constitution. Today, the Russian Duma demonstrated that homophobia is an official state policy. Even though homosexuality was decriminalized in post-Soviet Russia in 1993, the increasing political power of the country's Orthodox Church reinforces cultural condemnation of same-gender sexual relations. Reports of brutal gay-bashing murders in Russia have made recent headlines around the world. A large majority of the Russian population believes that gay people are not even entitled to all the rights of citizenship. Another bill passed by the Duma this week essentially outlaws blasphemy, or what it calls insulting people's religious feelings. Violators face heavy fines and jail time.
Ugly demonstrations of homophobia persist in France almost a month after President François Hollande signed a bill into law opening civil marriage and adoption rights to lesbian and gay couples. They included the pathetic disruption of the French Open tennis finals this week by two shirtless men protesting the legislation. One waved a lit flare as security guards quickly hustled both men out of sight. Six other shirtless men unfurled a banner calling for President Hollande's resignation. In a far more serious incident, five suspects with ties to an ultra-right-wing nationalist group have been charged with complicity in the violent, brain-damaging murder in Paris of promising 18-year-old student and gay activist Clément Méric. He died on June 6th following a street brawl with far-right militants. Thousands of people poured into the streets of eastern Paris 2 days later to honor Merrick, chanting, "We don't forgive, we don't forget," and marching behind a banner that said he was forever in our memories, forever in our hearts. A judge rejected efforts by the prosecuting attorney to try at least one of the men among the five defendants, four men and one woman, for murder. Brass knuckles were reportedly found in the home of the man believed to have delivered the fatal blows. But it now appears that manslaughter convictions, which call for up to 15 years in prison, will be the maximum punishment any of them faces.
In happier news for sexual minorities, authorities in Nepal have finally renewed the charity license of the Blue Diamond Society, which, among other things, allows the Himalayan nation's largest LGBT organization to receive funding from abroad. The group also shoulders a majority of the work in the country around HIV/AIDS education and prevention. It has a full-time staff of more than 750 people in 40 offices across the country. Those workers were not paid in more than 7 months while the Chief District Office of Kathmandu investigated allegations of corruption by the organization's founder, Sunil Pant, who's now Nepal's only out national legislator. A June 5th Blue Diamond Society media release announced that, after multiple investigations by the CDO office and the Social Welfare Council, BDS and Mr. Pant were exonerated of all these false and malicious charges.
Traditional June expressions of LGBT pride continued across the U.S. this week. Pro basketball player Jason Collins stole the show at Boston's annual Pride Parade on June 6th, just 2 months after becoming the first active NBA player to come out. Surrounded by friends, family, and marching side-by-side with Democratic U.S. Representative Joseph P. Kennedy III, his former Stanford University roommate, the ex-Boston Celtic joined an estimated 15,000 other celebrants waving to the crowds packing the streets in the heart of the city on a sunny afternoon. Collins wore a black T-shirt that declared, #BeTrue, in rainbow lettering, along with a bright smile.
Attendance records were broken as thousands gathered in downtown Detroit, Michigan's Hart Plaza for this year's Motor City Pride. A diverse slate of weekend events ranged from drag shows to family picnics. Some activists are reportedly working on a ballot initiative for 2016 to repeal the state's constitutional ban on marriage equality.
Up to 400,000 people lined the streets of West Hollywood, California on June 9th for that city's annual Pride Parade. A moment of silence was held during the always colorful procession to remember those who are no longer with us or cannot be here today, the organizers said, to celebrate those that fought for pride and the freedoms we now enjoy, and to think of those who cannot celebrate pride and remain oppressed. Except for 1973, when unresolved disputes about a few previous years' parade entries scuttled it, the event has been held annually since 1970, the year after Stonewall. It was moved in 1979 from its traditional route along Hollywood Boulevard to Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood.
There's encouraging news for partnered out personnel now serving in the U.S. military, and hopeful news for those dishonorably discharged for being gay or lesbian. The Army and National Guard posted an announcement online this week that the same-gender domestic partners of serving troops will receive an ID card by September 1st, entitling them to a number of benefits their heterosexual counterparts already enjoy. Former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta announced his intention in February to extend whatever rights he could to same-gender military spouses that were not prohibited by the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. That 1996 law bans federal recognition of same-gender couples, even those who marry in states where it's legal. The U.S. Supreme Court is currently scrutinizing its constitutionality. A statement this week from the office of current Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel explained that additional benefits, such as health care and housing allowances, are by statute currently only available to spouses and therefore cannot be made available to same-sex domestic partners of service members under current law.
New York Congressional Democrat Steve Israel announced this week that he'll be introducing legislation in the House of Representatives to change the dishonorable discharges of gays and lesbians who were drummed out of the military when their sexuality became known to honorable discharges. Men and women who've been dishonorably discharged lose a wide range of veterans' benefits. That includes more than 30,000 gay and lesbian veterans. Homosexuals were first formally barred from the military service in the U.S. during World War I. The ultimately failed 1993 Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was supposed to have allowed them to serve as long as they stayed in the closet. More than 13,500 gays and lesbians were nevertheless kicked out of the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell until President Barack Obama signed repeal legislation in 2011. Congressman Israel's measure to make those dishonorable discharges honorable, however, will likely go nowhere in the House, over which Republicans have a controlling stranglehold.
And finally, a new book by openly gay British Lance Corporal James Wharton called Out in the Army chronicles his life in the military, including details of his close friendship with Prince Harry. The then 21-year-old Wharton went to Harry, his tank commander, in 2008, after six soldiers from another regiment harassed and threatened to beat him because he's gay. "I think I'm going to be murdered by the infantry," he says he told Harry. He writes that he then talked the prince through exactly what had happened. He had a complete look of bewilderment on his face. He said, "Right, I'm going to sort this shit out once and for all." He climbed out of the tank, confronted the tormentors, warned them they would face severe discipline if they continued their violent threats, and then reported the incident to a senior officer. "I will always be grateful to Harry," Wharton continues. "Until he went over and dealt with everything, I was on track for a battering. Prince Harry, we salute you."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 15th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
We'll hear about Pride's history and a newspaper's prestigious past later in the program.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the Imperial and Ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway.
Some have called the American Theater Wing's 67th annual honors on June 9th the gayest Tony Awards ever. Brilliantly hosted by outperformer Neil Patrick Harris, the annual gala celebrated a Broadway season with an epic number of LGBT characters and openly gay actors. One notable winner was playwright and AIDS activist Larry Kramer, who accepted the Isabel Stevenson Award for his humanitarian work.
"This has been a very exciting day for me. In addition to this award, Ryan Murphy started shooting the Normal Heart movie today, this morning in New York. At last. I would like to acknowledge my lover, David Webster. Honey, you give me such joy in my life. I know I'm not easy. Thank you for putting up with me. Serious writers are rarely considered serious writers when they are also serious activists, particularly serious gay activists. So I thank you, American Theater Wing, seriously, for taking me seriously."
That was star of Stage and Streets, Larry Kramer. The Tony for Best Actor in a Musical went to Billy Porter for his role in Kinky Boots, the very queer tale of a failing shoe company that saves its souls with footwear for drag queens.
Shakespeare said, "To thine own self be true." When I was 11 years old, my journey to truth began when I discovered the Tony Awards washing dishes in my kitchen, and the performance of Jennifer Holliday and the cast of Dreamgirls on the Tony Awards took my breath away. That moment, it changed my life, and I'm here before you today. I want to thank my family, the best sister that a brother could ever have, Mary Martha Ford, my mother, Clarinda Jean Johnson Porter Ford at home in Pittsburgh. You are the personification of true Christianity. Your willingness to embrace that which you don't understand with unconditional love is a template that the world could benefit from employing. Your courage gives me life. And I love you. To my Kinky Boots family, to the amazing cast and crew, and everybody at the Al Hirschfeld Theater, our producers, Hal Luftig and Daryl Roth, to Harvey Fierstein and Cindy Lauper, who created the template that allows for me to express the journey of forgiveness and acceptance and ultimately a necessary healing for my soul. To Jerry Mitchell for reaching back, lifting up an old friend, and giving me a space to soar. To my co-star, Stark Sands, you are my rock, my sword, my shield. Your grace gives me presence. I share this award with you. I'm going to keep it at my house, but I share it with you.
Best Actor in a Musical, Billy Porter led the way for Best Musical, Kinky Boots. With its book by gay icon Harvey Fierstein, queer ally Cyndi Lauper also won the Tony for Best Original Score.
Let's go again.
The The importance of Pride Month is captured in a pair of June-worthy Rainbow Minutes.
Gay Pride events worldwide, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Before the rebellion at the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village on June 28, 1969, advocating for homosexuals was known as the homophile movement. After the riots caused by police harassment at the Stonewall Inn came the birth of the phrase gay liberation movement and the use of the term gay pride. In fact, the site of the Stonewall Inn on Christopher Street is seen in the name of the first anniversary of the gay liberation movement, called Christopher Street Gay Liberation Day. It took place on June 28, 1970. Surprisingly, simultaneous smaller marches took place that same day in Los Angeles and San Francisco. A year later, in 1971, gay pride marches also took place in Boston, Dallas, Milwaukee, and cities abroad, including Paris, West Berlin, and Stockholm. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Nancy Waldo.
A rainbow from sea to sea, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In 2003, Gilbert Baker, the creator of the original rainbow flag back in 1978, was commissioned to produce a giant rainbow flag for the 25th anniversary of the flag itself. With hot pink no longer a non-standard color for flag production, the flag was restored to its original 8 colors for its silver anniversary unfurling. Those colors included hot pink, red, orange, yellow, green, turquoise, indigo, and violet. Dubbed Rainbow 25 Sea to Sea, the mile and a quarter long by 16 foot wide flag was displayed in Key West, Florida on June 15, 2003. Over 3,000 volunteers held the flag, which ran the length of Duval Street from the Atlantic Ocean on one end to the Gulf of Mexico on the other. At the time, it was deemed the world's longest flag. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Richmond City Councilman Charles Samuels.
What was loved and hated and read all over? When it hit the streets in 1972, Gay News was the first national LGBT newspaper in Britain, and it remained a lively and sometimes controversial presence for a decade. Now, 40 years later, Gay News Features editor Keith Howes is bringing the paper's politics, celebrities, and music back to life in a YouTube series that recalls the sense of community that the paper helped build. Howes, who now lives in Sydney, Australia, told This Way Out correspondent Barry McKay about the project.
It's a very exciting initiative. It's the first time I think that a newspaper, a community newspaper like Gay News, has been featured as a YouTube series. It covers the politics of the time, the 1970s, and also it covers the many interviews we did with people from all walks of life, but also people from the arts, particularly films, theatre, and the world.
Give us a few names.
Oh, I'll give you a few names. From music, Dusty Springfield, Rod Stewart, Bette Midler, Eartha Kitt, Peter Allen, Patti Smith, Stephen Sondheim. From theatre and film, Angela Lansbury, John Hurt, Ian McKellen, Derek Jacobi, Derek Jarman. From dance, Rudolf Nureyev. From art, David Hockney. From literature, Christopher Isherwood. And last but not least, the King of Leather from London, Brian Derbyshire.
So what was Gay News? When did it start, and what sort of newspaper was it?
Gay News began in June 1972. It was an independent community newspaper for both gay men and, as they were known then, gay women, i.e. lesbians. It was fortnightly, and it was established really as a political newspaper in the sense of fighting for gay rights, gay equality, for giving gay people a window on the world that they'd not had before in Britain, because the mainstream press wasn't interested in gay people outside them being arrested for all sorts of sexual criminal activities, because it was only in 1967 that gay men were allowed to have sex with other men if they were over the age of 21. So there was a lot of restriction still in the mid to late 1970s, which is why gay news was needed. It was needed both for information, but also it was needed to give people a sense of pride, a sense of achievement, accomplishment. So we looked at gay history, we looked at all the arts that reflected gay people's interests, opera, ballet, music, cinema, theatre. But also we looked at gay people. We had a series called Gay Britain, where I, as a features editor, went round to England, Scotland and Wales, talking to gay and lesbian people. And there was another series we had, which was called You Tell Us, where we went to gay pubs and discos and asked questions like, what would you leave your lover for? How promiscuous are you? And do you like body hair? And that question was answered by a very, very young, rather pretty young blonde. His name was George O'Dowd, and a few years later he became Boy George.
So that was one of the first appearances, I guess, in the media Boy George would ever have had.
We listed his age as 21, but I think he was probably quite a bit younger, probably about 15. Mm. So yes, I think it would have been one of his earliest appearances.
So could you tell me what was the funniest interview you ever did at your time with Gay News?
The funniest interview would have to be with a dame. Her name was Dame Edna Everidge. It wasn't so much an interview, it was more like a royal audience. She was rather nonplussed to be interviewed by Gaiety News. She thought it was a paper for happy people.
And I got very, very lonely, and my old bridesmaid, Merge Orsop, who'd been widowed, Merge, poor woman. And she came and she stayed with me, and she stuffed and stayed the night, and we would have, quite naturally, a little bit of a cuddle. With our nighties on, of course. And you know, it's a little bit of a cuddle when you're lonely. It's very, very nice. And it's possible some of your readers know what I mean by that. The thing is, this was called by the ancient Greeks, it was called lesbianism. It just means having a little cuddle. It's Greek for cuddling.
One of the exciting things about the project is this absolute cascade of photographs, cartoons, film and TV clips that we've managed to prospect and assemble from the trove that is the Gay News Archive. It's the first time that this material's been seen in this form, and I think that it's going to be of great interest, not just to people in Britain, but people who have an interest in the 1970s. We've got some lovely 70s music from Village People, Gloria Gaynor, and many other people from that time. There are going to be sights and sounds that are going to be very nostalgic for people that lived through the mid to late 70s. Coming out was a very important part of Gay News. It was felt that the act of coming out, either to your parents, your friends, workmates, or coming out in public, which is what... But we didn't force anybody at all to come out. We did not go in for the concept of outing. However, there were some difficult moments. For example, I interviewed Dusty Springfield, and I was told by her manager or the recording agent or whoever that she would talk about anything, including her sexuality. Well, this was not the case. She hadn't been told that this was what was expected of her. So it presented a very sticky and embarrassing moment when I did ask her, and she said that she had not intended this to be discussed and she would not discuss it. And in fact, she burst into tears. The opposite of Dusty Springfield was David Hockney. David Hockney was one of the first really out people that I knew in the 1960s. And he gave an interview, I think, for issue 2 of Gay News. When we had our 100th birthday issue in 1976, I wanted the interviewee to be David Hockney. And I went round to see him, and I think it's an example of where anything goes. I was able to ask David anything at all about his sexuality, and he had no problem in telling me about his sex life.
I'm not really a very promiscuous person at all now. The only time I ever was when I first lived in Los Angeles, and because it was easy,
I think because America is a more superficial, generally, it's a more superficial kind of culture, it's easy to have sex is all part and parcel of that thing.
And also it just depends what you want out of life. I mean, I know many people who live in LA, all they want is anonymous sex, really. They don't care to speak to the person.
That was a little clip there from painter David Hockney back in 1976 being interviewed by Keith Howells. So Gay News was perhaps infamous in the late 1970s for a poem that was published in the paper called The Love That Dare Speak Its Name.
We published a poem which was about Jesus and the centurion. It was quite sexual. The centurion was having sexual fantasies about Jesus on the cross. Mrs. Whitehouse was shown the poem and she took us to the Old Bailey. The paper was found guilty. Dennis Lemon, the editor, was given a suspended prison sentence.
In July 1977, the Old Bailey jury found Gay News and its editor, Mr. Dennis Lemon, guilty over the publication of a poem and accompanying drawing about Jesus Christ. It was the first case of its kind for 56 years. Last March, the convictions and fines totaling £1,500 were upheld by the Court of Appeal, but a suspended prison sentence imposed on the editor was set aside. Mr. Lemon said after today's ruling that he would now consider taking the case to the Human Rights Court in Strasbourg.
What actually came out of this for the paper?
The case drew enormous attention to what had actually just been a very small community newspaper. Time magazine and I think Newsweek got hold of the story. And a lot of heterosexual people came to our rescue, rather more actually than gay people. A lot of gay people felt that we should never have published the poem. Certainly many Christian gay people were offended by it. You could say that it was the making of Gay News and also the breaking of Gay News. It was the making of Gay News in the sense it became very, very well known. So we increased the number of pages because we had more advertising, more people wanted to be involved with the paper. But also it meant that our editor became very famous briefly, and I think we can honestly say it went to his head, and eventually the paper, through a series of calamities, folded in April 1983. The great and glorious thing about this new series is that it so well reflects what the paper was all about, which was something for everyone. And how can you find us? Well, you can go to the YouTube search engine and put in Gay News UK, Keith Howells, that's me, and that's spelled H-O-W-E-S, or you can go to the Google search engine and find Gay News, Keith Howells, there as well. And I hope you do. You'll be amazed at what's there.
This is Barry Mackay.
And Keith Howells for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Michelle Marie Gilkison, Nancy Waldo, and Charles Samuels with Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Barry McKay contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Bette Midler performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is funded by grants from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and by support from our listeners. Thank you. Visit us online at thiswayout.org for program and subscription information and for links to our podcasts, blog, and Facebook page. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KEUL Girdwood and Hope, Alaska, 2NSB Chatswood, New South Wales, WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.